Perhaps if there's one affliction that God's people most often have and yet feel too ashamed to admit they have, it is depression. Depression is one of those conditions that the world tells us is a disease. Some Christians tell us it is a sin, but the truth is not quite either one of those. In fact, depression can have many different causes. Depression can have many different manifestations. Understanding its differences and its various solutions is a big part to the Bible's answer to depression. We're in the middle of a series looking at biblical living, considering topics like anger, forgiveness, pressure, stress, and depression is one of those. Last week we considered that depression comes in various forms. It's caused by all sorts of things and various responses accompany it. And we've seen what at root many of the issues are in depression. But today and next week we want to consider how to tackle it and how to approach the topic of depression and how to help a Christian struggling with depression. The first thing is that we want to gather as much information as possible. As we've said, every individual depressive experience could have more than one cause. And if you try to solve one person's depression with another person's solution, you could be trying to put a square peg in a round hole. Depression can't be reduced to one cause. So, what are the sort of things we want to find out? We want to find out about the person's physical condition, about perhaps unconfessed sin, expectations that were wrong, disappointments, anger, sadness, resentment, a lack of forgiveness, meaninglessness, failure, duties that have been neglected, a self-focus, self-pity, wrong views of God. As you can see, there are many things we want to ask. So, here are 9 questions that we want to ask depressed people. First of all, we want to ask, have you had a medical checkup to identify any genuine physical condition? Something such as a thyroid condition, cortisol levels, hormonal imbalance, vitamin deficiency, recent sickness. All of these are important for identifying what could be an actual physiological contribution to mood changes, to feeling down. If someone complains of something like this, and it hasn't been the case in the past, it's especially important that we identify how much the body is contributing towards depression. Another question that has to do with the body, our second question is, tell me about your diet and your sleep patterns. When someone eats badly, they very often contribute towards depression. Mood plunges with various kind of sugar and insulin levels, levels of caffeine, all kinds of other contributors that can cause despondency, fatigue, insomnia. Sleep patterns are massive for depression because most people who are sleep deprived experience some kind of depression. When sleep patterns are haphazard, when they are generally too low, less than 7 hours of sleep per night, that can be a big contributor towards depression. We want to ask people about their body. C.S. Lewis wrote in the Screwtape Letters, the advice of the one demon to the other, Screwtape writing to Wormwood regarding temptation. He said, never let him, that's the Christian, never let him notice the medical aspect. Keep him wondering what pride or lack of faith has delivered him into your hands when a simple inquiry into what he's been eating or drinking for the last 24 hours would show him whence your ammunition comes. So, our first line of inquiry is all about the body. But after we've asked about the body, we next want to ask about the person's life circumstances. And so, our third question is very simple. What is happening in your life? Now, that seems obvious, but often people have gotten used to a life of much disappointment, a loveless marriage, children that are in deep rebellion to God, a job that does seem pointless with perhaps an abusive boss, financial strain that has continued, a physical condition that has been very painful to live with for many years, perhaps decades. This question at least brings to light disappointment, fears, responses to their life, a wrong response to being sinned against. And so we understand what their days have been like. Proverbs 15 verse 15 says, "All the days of the afflicted are evil." Following on from that is our fourth question. We ask the person, "What are your unmet expectations?" Here we're asking someone, what did you hope your life would be? Where did you hope you would have reached by now? What did you expect in your marriage, in your job, in your church, in your friendship? What has happened in your life that is either a disappointment or something you didn't want to have? The book of Job, chapter 30, verse 26 says, "When I expected good, then evil came. When I waited for light, then darkness came. I am seething within and cannot relax." Depression often comes from unmet expectations. Another way of putting this is, what do you hope for? What are you looking for? What are you treasuring? What do you think will bring you happiness or joy? Often, when someone is depressed, we simply have to ask, what is it that they wanted and didn't receive? What is it that they didn't want and did receive? Our fifth question takes us further. Often a depressed person feels like a failure. And so we want to ask, if you believe you are a failure, whose standards are you trying to live up to? Who gave you that standard of success or failure? Is it yours? Is it others? Is it God's? The problem with perfectionism is that it's a kind of pride. The perfectionistic person thinks that, in fact, he's being humble by feeling his failure, but what he's done is he's set up a standard of performance that is superhuman, and then he lives with guilt that he cannot attain that standard. Then his life is filled with self-pity. J. Oswald Sanders said in his book Spiritual Leadership, "We live in an imperfect world, and we must come to terms with the possible. Setting more modest and realistic goals would bring great release to many an idealistic perfectionist." Often it is simply pride that drives the depression of a person who's perfectionistic. A sixth question now leads to the question of true depression, which is neglect of life responsibilities. And so we ask, what life responsibilities have you been or are you currently neglecting? The depressed wife begins to neglect helping her family at home. The depressed man at work finds himself increasingly scrolling on social media and clicking and being distracted by websites. Especially those whose weekday work is self-structured, if they become depressed, they neglect more and more of their work. And the cycle that results of allowing chores and duties to slip by and mount up increases the guilt and the sense of hopelessness of ever tackling it, and so the cycle goes. Proverbs 18 verse 9 says, "He who is slack in his work is brother to him who is a great waster." Life responsibilities. Question number 7, as we gather information on somebody's depression, is this: have you allowed your depression to affect your love for others? Jesus' command was to love your neighbor as yourself. One of the results of depression is an inward focus. It stops us from caring for others the way we should and causes us to cycle inward. The Apostle Paul's example of loving others is one that happened in a time of sadness. He said in 2 Corinthians 1 verse 3, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. Do you see how the comfort there overflows? You're comforted by God to such a degree that you can actually comfort others who need it. And so there's this reciprocal comforting that takes place. Even the depressed person can end up becoming an encouragement to others as they fight through their sorrow and their sadness for the glory of God. But that comes from deliberately seeking to love God and others. So question 7 asks, have you allowed your depression to affect your love for others? So these questions are all questions about life. What is happening in your life? What are your unmet expectations? Whose standards are you trying to live up to if you think you're a failure? What life responsibilities are you neglecting? Have you allowed your depression to affect your love for others? Well, this brings us to our last two questions, questions 8 and 9, which are questions about spiritual issues. We've dealt with the body, we've dealt with life circumstances, and now we talk about the spiritual life. Question 8 is simply this, is God pointing out any sin in your life? Possibly one of the reasons that I could be suffering or experiencing deep depression is because I'm sinning. It is possible. It's not always the case. Depression is not sin, and sin is not always at the root of depression, but sometimes it is. In the case of those who have sinned and not confessed their sin, those who are hiding their sin, the guilt and the shame and the hardness and the conviction could be part of the situation. Question 9, as bizarre as it may seem, is an important one, which is this, do you want to change? In very perverse ways, sometimes depression can become comfortable. It can come to feel like a friend, because underneath depression's veil of passivity is a heart that often prefers the irresponsibility of hopelessness. When I'm hopeless, I can be passive. When I'm passive, I don't have to make decisions. When I don't have to make decisions, I don't have to face responsibility. And so often, sometimes people prefer depression so that they can remain in a place of passive, apathetic non-responsibility. This is why some depressed people are immune to encouragement. They don't want the encouragement, because if hope steps in or creeps in, they have to embrace it and change. A refusal to receive encouragement is what it is, and it's a sin. Because joy and thankfulness are godly responses to life, a refusal to accept encouragement from others is not. And so when a person is continually dismissing every biblical truth you give them, saying yes, but, that's a habit which is an unwillingness to be encouraged. The Bible says of this in Proverbs 26:12, do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Proverbs 28:26 says, he who trusts in his own heart is a fool. And so question 9 asks, do you want to change? The person has to see that discouragement has several lies that he is choosing to believe. A depressed person who refuses to be encouraged is believing at least 4 lies. Lie number 1 is, my pain is unique. Lie number 2 is, God has abandoned me. Number 3, this is more than I can handle. And number 4, there's no way out. But listen to how the Lord answers this in 1 Corinthians 10 verse 13. No temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man, and God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but will with the temptation provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. That verse answers all 4 of the lies of depression. So question 9 is, do you want to change? Because 1 Corinthians 10 verse 13 says that you can. Now, with these 9 questions, we should have understood the very individual and particular nature of the depression that we're dealing with. Each one is unique. Each one comes with its own particular background, contributors, sin, focus. And so, with all of that information in hand about the person's body, about their life circumstances, and about their spiritual life, we're now ready to apply some solutions. The first of those solutions is to encourage the person, or if it's us, to follow this advice ourselves, and that is get a full medical checkup to identify or rule out genuine medical problems. Genuine medical problems are things that can show up in a test, a blood test, a test of the hormones. This is a proper medical checkup. It's not a speculative statement about what might be going on inside your brain. It's an actual checkup that can deal with measurable, empirically verifiable conditions in the body. Secondly, start doing what is right, or to put it negatively, stop neglecting life responsibilities. As we've seen, depression is a downward spiral. Doing what is right helps reverse the plunge, slow down this downward trend, and move the person back up. We remember how the Lord said to Cain in Genesis 4 verse 6, "Why are you angry? Why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted?" 1 Peter 3 verse 10, Peter says, "The one who desires life, to love and see good days, must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. He must turn away from evil and do good." There's some real common sense here, and that is, good feelings, enjoyment of life, comes from doing what you know is right, pleasing God. A depressed person needs to understand and benefit from this reality. Often in depressed people I've dealt with, they often want some answer to some great question which they feel has paralyzed them moving forward. And they think that only if that solution comes will their depression be solved. But in the meantime, they're not getting on with just loving their wives and being pleasant neighbors and being diligent workers. And as a result, they're exacerbating their depression by having a miserable life all round. Depressed person needs to understand, if you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? It may sometimes seem that doing the average stuff is futile, but it actually helps you feel better. And truly, if you neglect all your life responsibilities, and your whole life is a mess, and everything around you is declining, certainly your depression will get worse. Being God-focused and other-focused, acts of love and duty replaces the relentless and destructive self-focus of depression. Pleasing Christ, though, is the ultimate goal of doing right. So, it's not just about feeling better. We have to tell someone that this is not just a trick to improve your mood, because that will have only a limited amount of effect. And in fact, a person can begin to idolize just feeling better. The real goal here is to obey the Lord, to be in right relationship with God, to be in fellowship with Him. You should desire to sow what is right and then reap what is right. So, a depressed person needs to reverse the downward spiral of neglecting life responsibilities, including decision-making. If he's delayed some difficult or painful decisions, then he needs to decide on those, get good counsel, and act. Delay brings more frustration, more depression. It's what Elizabeth Elliot would tell her students, do the next thing. And so, it is a life-changing principle for depressed people, do the next thing. Perhaps you don't feel like getting out of bed and brushing your teeth, but it's the next right thing to do when you wake up. Maybe you don't feel like brushing your hair and being neat and looking good and dressing attractively, but it's the next right thing. You don't feel like going to work. You don't feel like doing housework. You don't feel like interacting cheerfully with others. It's the next right thing to do. Do your duties. Obey the constraints and the callings that God has put on your life. The third thing we want to apply to depression is to teach the individual to implement a schedule. We've seen how depression is exacerbated by neglecting tasks, by putting off things, by procrastinating. And so implementing a schedule enables us to have order, enables us to have duties that we meet, and that structure is a huge part of alleviating and turning depression back. In fact, the emotional energy that's usually spent in worry or brooding or self-pity has to be redirected. Making a schedule, enforcing upon yourself duties that you have to do, redirects your energy to loving God and loving neighbor. This is not just a case of keeping busy so as to distract yourself. It's about being productive as an image bearer so that your energy is not sinfully spent. Now, here's some general ideas about a schedule. Go to bed, get up at the same time every day. Eat at appointed times, try not to snack randomly. Exercise at appointed times. Have a schedule for your work where you actually time box what you're going to do throughout the day and then check that you're doing it. Write down one thing you agree to work on every day. If it helps you, it certainly helps me, use some kind of task manager to guide what you'll do. And then follow through on agreements that you've made with other people. It's really important as well to include some kind of physical exercise, because good fatigue produces good sleep. Often it alleviates physical pain. Sweating physically is good for us. Charles Spurgeon once said of depressed ministers, he said, "A day's breathing of fresh air upon the hills, a few hours' ramble in the beech woods, would sweep the cobwebs out of the brain of scores of our toiling ministers who are now but half alive. A mouthful of sea air or a stiff walk in the wind's face would not give grace to the soul, but it would yield oxygen to the body, which is next best." Now, of course, we don't want to overdo a schedule, and we don't want to neglect accountability. We want people to have structure in their lives, but we don't want to create a kind of structure which is beyond where they are. And so we put a structure in place and we check that it's being done. So here initially are three responses to depression. We ask the person to get a physical checkup. We see if they have been neglecting any of life's responsibilities, and we make sure that they have a schedule that they live by. But we've just begun. There are, in fact, 9 more things that we want to do in response to depression to help the Christian to realign his thinking and his acting so that his heart can live in healthy love for God and others. So join me next time as we continue to see, what is the Bible's response to depression? And how do we live biblical lives that glorify God even while struggling with depression?